It's always my pleasure to welcome here to this program David Murata, who's the president of Murata Wealth Management and online at muratahonmoney.com. David, happy new year and welcome back to the Shilling Show. Well, I better let you say it there.
Thank you so much for having me.
I always push the wrong button. Okay, so anyway, today we're going to be doing a investment review of 2014, what did well and what didn't do so well, and then looking ahead to 2015, we'll get into that as well. But I want people to kind of understand, you know, from an investment point of view, the various classifications. How do you classify investments or think about compartmentalizing them so that you can put together a quote-unquote balanced portfolio?
Yeah, great question. We split our investment universe into six different asset classes. Three of them are for stability. They're what you'd call fixed income or bonds, and they are short money, things that mature in under 2 years, U.S. bonds and foreign bonds. And the purpose of stability is to provide two things. One, your safe withdrawals for the next 5 to 7 years. So even if the markets tank, you can still continue to take money out in retirement. Or if you're 6 years from retirement, you can still have your money set aside for the first 5 to 7 years of retirement. And studies have also shown that having a little bit, at least, on the stability side, 10 to 20%, can reduce volatility without giving up very much in returns. And so bonds don't move in sync with stocks. And so when stocks go down and bonds go up a little bit, you can rebalance and have some dry powder to put it back into the stock market. And that can end up boosting returns by a little bit, especially over very volatile markets. And it seems like the normal volatility has come back and things are slightly more volatile. The other three asset classes we use are for appreciation, and they are U.S. stocks, foreign stocks, and a category we call resource stocks, which are inflation hedges, things like energy, precious metals, base metals, real estate investment trusts, something that will be a hedge against inflation. And we have separated these categories based upon their average correlation, how much they move in sync with one another, being 0.7 or less on average. And within U.S. stocks, yes, you want to break it down into large, small, mid-cap, value, growth, different sectors of the economy. But those all tend to move in sync more or less with each other, with the U.S. economy and with what the U.S. dollar is doing. And so to have all of your eggs in that basket means that about 6% of 10-year periods will be negative or flat. Whereas if you have a more diversified portfolio, you actually don't get 10-year periods that are negative or flat. And so having a decade that's lost or down is difficult when you're in retirement or approaching retirement. And it's better to have a more balanced return so that you can have a little bit less volatility.
David, let's talk about the economy. I want to get to the dollar a little bit later, but the economy itself, we keep hearing that we have all these new jobs created, that the economy is roaring ahead and everything is fine and getting better. I hear the reports from the Chamber of Commerce and everything, but I simply don't buy it. Most of the people I talk to are barely getting by.
Yeah, it turns out that the economy is doing better than it was a couple of years ago by all the statistics and measures. And by the economy, what I mean is the publicly traded companies that are part of the S&P 500 and the small cap and the mid cap within the U.S. are doing better than they were doing before. Mm-hmm. And so the higher stock market prices in the United States are justified by the higher earnings by corporations. How the corporations have gotten their earnings back, though, is a little bit different story. They've outsourced a lot, they've outsourced their profits, and they've trimmed back their workforce, and they've automated more and had less labor costs within the United States. So that's why some people have called it, yes, it's a great recovery, but it's a little bit of a jobless recovery, meaning that the participation in the workplace is not a whole lot higher than it was. In fact, it's fairly low. And so that causes problems within the economy, and that's why it's not necessarily being experienced by everyone as much as it could have been had the profits been kept in the United States and had hiring continue to happen in the United States.
So could individuals, I mean, theoretically, could every individual have benefited and participated in this by just simply having invested in strategically in the stock market?
Yeah, it's certainly true that investing in the stock market gets the profits not only of the things that are done within the United States, but the things that are done by automating, outsourcing, and using Far East or Mexican labor costs. And it turns out you can do all of those things as a company. For a large company, it's much harder for small companies to benefit that way, which is why I think, at least at this point, most of the job growth is happening because of small businesses. And small businesses are particularly hard hit by the tax changes because they can't benefit from some of the tax, the creative tax accounting that enables larger corporations to ship their profits overseas by having a wholly owned subsidiary in another country and then simply paying them too much for whatever they're doing to put all their profits in that overseas subsidiary.
We've got just a couple of minutes left in this segment. Before we go to the 2014 review, I wanted to talk to you about the security, the cybersecurity of the markets, because there has been a lot of talk over the past couple of days, weeks, months regarding cybersecurity. And there was talk that previous market glitches or crashes have been suspicious in nature. Someone even wrote a book about it, and we interviewed him here a couple times on the subject. Could this be vulnerable, this being the U.S. markets, to a cyber attack, and could it really wipe out a lot of wealth?
Yeah, that's a great question. To do that, you would have to somehow take someone else's shares and with them. So long as you own shares in a company, and there's not a whole lot to steal there, because it's a piece of paper ownership, and it's all in street name, meaning who it gets transferred to is electronically recorded, such that you can't just steal shares and then somehow market, because they're all in street name and they keep track of who owns them. Identity theft is a much more likely occurrence. And there's a couple of things that we recommend that everyone do. One is to lock down your credit completely, which helps. It means no one can get credit in your name. I did it probably a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Since I've done it, I've released my credit at least 10 times for various times when I needed it. But every time I release it, I release it for 7 days. And so I have a 7-day vulnerability, and then it locks down again. It's very easy to do. It costs $30, $10 per credit bureau. The other thing that we recommend is to have a key such that when you log on to your custodial accounts, you have to put this changing 6-digit key in. Mm-hmm. And every time you talk to them on the phone, you have a special word that you have to say. Until you say that, you can't do anything else. And those two ways of locking it down mean in person and online, you have something that only you have in your possession and no one can get at.
977-1070 is the phone number. David Morata is our guest here on The Shilling Show. If you have comments or questions, we're going to take a review of 2014 in investments and then look ahead to 2015. And we welcome you. 977-1070. The Shilling Show returns in a moment. Shilling Show continues here with our guest, David Morata. He's the president of Morata Wealth Management, online at moratonmoney.com. And here for you is we're talking about investments 2014 and looking forward to 2015, and also taking your phone calls at 977-1070. Let's go to the phones and welcome Robert to The Shilling Show. Hi, Robert.
Hey. David Morata said something to the effect that he thought the valuations on the market, stock market, were about right. Legitimate. He didn't use that word about right. I don't know, but the inference was that they made sense. I guess you might say whatever the stock market is now. I kind of feel like that's like saying that the economy of Virginia is not a situation that's going well because of some artificial if not for the federal government and all the money coming into Virginia, Virginia wouldn't be have done as well as it's been doing, like, during McDonald's administration. And then, but the market got, the access to $80 billion or a lot of that money, $80 billion a month for the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, that seems artificially created to me. And I guess I don't see how... it seems that the valuation is real in the market when you have all this printed money.
Well, let's get a response, because I think you make a point that many people would share the concern. So go ahead.
Yeah, Robert is trying to figure out, as are many investors, what it means that the U.S. government has flooded the market with a lot of money. The M2 is wildly high. M2 is a measure of the money supply, and it's a complex answer. My answer first on the markets being fairly valued is, some people look at the Shiller 10-year PE ratio and they say the market is way overpriced and we're liable to get poor returns for the next few years. And the Shiller PE ratio includes the last 10 years of earnings, and that includes 2008, 2009, where a lot of companies actually had negative earnings, so that really hurts it. Companies have gotten their earnings back. So if you look at the forward-looking PE ratios, the markets are maybe a little bit overpriced, but not a lot. And that's what I was intending to say of the, because the companies have gotten their earnings back, the market is not wildly overpriced in that measurement. It might be just slightly overpriced. And if you think about it, a PE ratio of 16, which is the forward-looking PE ratio for the U.S. markets, mean that if you buy a stock for $16 a share and it has a dollar of earnings every single year, that's a fair valuation. 14 might be a little bit better, but it's not the wildly high valuation. But Robert's talking about the federal government having flooded the market with money and flooded the economy with money. And there's two different things that mark inflation or a drop in the dollar. The definition of inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods. But over the past year, in 2014, we actually had a strengthening of the U.S. dollar, especially in the second half of the year when the dollar strengthened almost 12.5% in just a six-month period. So the question is why, because there's so many dollars flooding into the economy, is the dollar actually strengthening? And one way to look at it is, if inflation is too many dollars chasing too many goods, it's very important how fast the dollars are chasing goods. So what we've had is the velocity of money, which is a measurement of how fast money moves around the economy, and the velocity of money is at a 50-year low. It is incredibly low. It's what the Fed is worried about. It's the reason they keep throwing more dollars out, is the dollars are moving so sluggishly around the economy that it makes it look like there aren't very many of them, even though they have lots of dollars. They move so slowly, you don't get to see them as frequently.
Do you mean that people and businesses and entities are sitting on huge piles of cash? Is that what this means?
Correct. So when, for example, in 2009, we had bailouts, 1, 2, and 3, and we've had quantitative easing, what most financial institutions have done is they've used that to simply bolster their books.
Mm-hmm.
So they were illiquid before 2008. They were going to go bankrupt. Now they're flush with cash, and they can buy things that they just sit on in terms of resources. So if you tried to get a loan, banks aren't loaning very, very easily because the interest rates aren't really good, and so they're only loaning to the highest quality people, and you have to give them your life story in triplicate in order to get a loan. But what they are doing is they're simply flushing their accounts so that they're solvent again and they can not have a repeat of 2008. So the velocity of money is not moving very quickly, and because the velocity of money is not moving very quickly, people aren't moving that money around. It looks like there's less dollars than it would had the velocity picked up. So what that means going forward into maybe 2015, maybe it'll be as late as 2016, is that when the velocity of money picks up, there are a lot of dollars chasing that are out there, but they're just not moving very fast. And were they to move fast, then you'd have, instead of a strengthening of the dollar, you'd have a decrease of the dollar. And so most people looking at this think that the dollar will continue to strengthen as long as the economy is slow, the velocity of money is slow. But if the economy really picks up and the money begins to move around more, what you'd have is a decrease in the dollar. And in 2014, the strengthening of the dollar was really the story of the markets and affected three out of the six asset classes tremendously.
Did anybody predict this? Because, you might have seen it coming, but most of the people I talked to over the course of the last year was the dollar is going to be weaker, 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 and it's eventually just going to collapse.
It was about a year ago that I finally came across this particular analysis, and I started looking at the velocity of money. because the velocity of money is an important measure in how many dollars are out there. So I'm not sure that it's as prevalent as it could be, but when you look at what the dollar's actually doing, you only have one of two explanations. Why is the dollar strengthening? Well, the velocity of money is slow. Why else is the dollar strengthening? Well, the dollar is being measured against the euro and the yen, and the euro and the yen really fell apart in 2014. So if you look at the dollar against other currencies, it did not drop as much as it did against the euro and the yen, but they measure the dollar, the U.S. dollar index, in mostly euro and yen. That represents probably about 70% of the dollar index. And there's only a little bit in there, which is the Swiss franc and the Swedish kronor and other currencies like that.
977-1070 is the phone number. Comments or questions for David Murata. Before we go to the break, we did have listener Bill emailing in regarding cybersecurity. If Sony's servers and hard drives can be wiped out, all the data lost, are not our stocks and bonds subject to the same vulnerability? How can investors protect themselves in a world where their wealth is zeros and ones in the cloud?
Yeah, it's a great question. I know at the custodians that we use, they have regular offsite backups that go back days, months, maybe even more than that. And they have PDFs of your account holdings that go back years, and those are backed up as well. So I'm fairly certain that we also keep record of what we own, and I'm pretty sure that even if their servers were wiped out, we could go back and prove which of the stocks that are in their holdings are actually ours. And because it's easier to destroy data than it is to actually gain anything from destroying data, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that they, even if they went on and destroyed all of their current server access, the offsite backups would still have the information that show what I own.
Okay, we're going to go to the break. And when we get back, I promise we will actually get to the topic of today, which was what did well and what failed in 2014 and what to look to in 2015 with David Murata here on The Shilling Show. A final segment of The Shilling Show for this hour with David Murata. So let's look back to 2014 and see what did well, and then let's look ahead in our remaining 7 or 8 minutes here. 2015. So take it away, David.
Yeah, the Vanguard S&P 500 was up about 13.8%. And U.S. stocks was certainly the category that did the best. Technology, I look at Vanguard Technology and Vanguard Healthcare as placeholders for those sectors of the economy. Technology was up 18% and healthcare was up 28.6%.
So now that's an interesting one. Healthcare went up in this age of Obamacare. I think it's a rhetorical question from my perspective, but well, why is that?
Yeah, and it's certainly increased demand. If you're going to make everybody buy stuff from your sector of the economy, it's going to go up. And I think one of the things that we're going to see is that healthcare spending as a percentage of our GDP will go up, so it'll be even a larger sector of the economy. Mm. If they were to require everyone to have the services of a financial planner, I'm sure our industry would do better as well. And you'd have an influx of new financial planners, and we'd get a bigger sector of the economy. Because the U.S. dollar strengthened, mm-hmm. you saw foreign bonds have a loss in U.S. dollars. Even if they made money in their local currency, the currency exchanges were not as good. The same thing was true in foreign stocks as well. Although the EAFE index lost 4.9% when you measure it in U.S. dollars, it gained 5.7% when it was measured in local currency. Hmm. And the 10.6% difference between the two returns was a result of currency exchange, the euro and the yen dropping 12.1% each during the year. And so you have a lot of effect like that where because of the currency exchange, you see a different return in local currencies than you see in U.S. currencies. One of the things about returns is most people think, well, what was the return of the S&P 500? That should be a fixed number for the year that everyone agrees on. But actually, there's at least 6 or 7 different numbers that you could give for the return of the S&P 500. I just wanted to go over because y'all hear things quoted differently. And if someone looks up one of my numbers and says, well, that's not the number I see, you've got the number in price, which doesn't include reinvesting dividends. Mm. You have the number gross, which is before any taxes. You have the number net, which in a lot of foreign countries, they have taxes they have to pay in the foreign exchanges, and so gross and net have a difference between them, then those two numbers are in U.S. dollars, but you can also look at them in the local currencies of whatever country they're in. And then finally, you can't invest in any of those indexes. You can't invest in an index. You can only invest in an actual product. And so the products that you invest in are the index minus the expense ratio of the product, plus or minus some tracking error because they don't track the index perfectly. And so you can get a whole host of different numbers for just one individual index that you're trying to look at.
So let's look at the thing in specific that did very poorly, or relatively speaking did poorly, is the thing that a lot of people would never be harmed going forward, which is energy.
Yeah, energy. If you look at Vanguard Energy, it was down 14.2% for the year, and it did terrible. Conversely, what did really well was airline stocks, because they have cheaper gas. You know, we just heard on the news, you know, gas is now below $2 a gallon at the pump in some places, and that's absolutely amazing. And the biggest cost in airlines is jet fuel. And so when oil prices are low, airlines do very well. And, you know, airlines over the course of 2014 were up, some of them up 89% and some of them up 114%. So they did incredibly well, almost doubling in value. So the big question is, will energy go lower than its $50 a barrel for oil, or will it go up from here? And that will have a big difference upon a lot of different sectors of the economy, but certainly resource stocks are a lot of energy. REITs did much better than resource stocks, so they helped pull the resource stock category up a little bit, precious metals did terrible, but base metals didn't do well. So the whole resource stock category went down. As the dollar strengthens, it buys more oil, it buys more gold, it buys more base metals, and it buys more real estate.
What about interest rates? We keep hearing that interest rates are going to have to be raised, and there's even a little bit of scuttlebutt about that now. What happens when that starts to happen, or is that not inevitable?
It's not inevitable in the near future. They could keep interest rates artificially low. They're keeping it low because in a low interest rate environment, you get more financial transactions. And when you get more financial transactions, you increase the velocity of money. So the odd thing about interest rates being low is that it has not increased the velocity of money. And economists call this pushing on a string because it doesn't do any good. You can push on a string, you pull the string, that does some good, but pushing on a string doesn't do much good. And lowering interest rates in a lot of different countries has had as much effect as pushing on a string. It just hasn't had its desired effect. So once the string actually starts becoming taut, then it will become taut for its own reasons, and then you might have a rise in interest rates, just as a result of not needing to have a lower interest rate to help the velocity of money anymore.
Let's look ahead just in our remaining minute or so here to what people ought to be watching in the new year.
Yeah, one of the things that we're perhaps known for in our firm is an interest in the countries that have the most economic freedom. Mm-hmm. And although the countries that have the most economic freedom held their value better than the euro and the yen, they still had a slight currency loss against the U.S. dollar. But what we found interesting is usually the countries with the most economic freedom beat the IFI index, the foreign index of developed countries, by about 4.5% per year. This year it was almost 8% they beat them by, meaning if the IFI index was down, 5%, then the countries with the most economic freedom in U.S. dollars were up 2.88%. And in the local currencies, they were up 10.5%. So they did much better in their local currency, certainly, than they did in the U.S. dollar. So we still think that that's a good strategy. The six different asset classes did very different things. But what you want in an investment portfolio are non-correlated assets. And by definition, non-correlated assets are going to move in different directions in different years. So what we've been doing here at the end of the year is we've been selling technology and healthcare and U.S. stocks. We've been buying a lot of resource stocks, energy stocks especially. We don't know if 2015 is the right year for that, but the rebalancing bonus that you get from doing things like that across the six asset classes provides another 1.6% per year. Now, obviously, when resource stocks are down over 10%, that 1.6% rebalancing bonus doesn't feel like a lot. But you just have to remember that U.S. stocks have had three good years, but they've also had three terrible years in a row as well. Mm. And we did a study recently that took a look at the last 12 months' returns. What did it have any predictive power of future returns? And what we found was it had absolutely none. So if the past 12 months were good, the next month and the next year was just as random as if the past 12 months was bad. And so we have a saying within our firm, it's always a good time to have a balanced portfolio, and rebalancing always will boost returns.
David Murata is at MurataOnMoney.com, president of Murata Wealth Management. Thanks so much for being with us here in our first appearance of the new year.
Thank you so much for having me.